Hey everybody, we're back with another Bald Move Television, the officially unofficial podcast for all of television. I'm Aaron.
I'm Jim.
And today we're here to talk about Rick and Morty Season 3. We don't usually talk about comedies because in our mind it often becomes a wasn't it funny when Rick manifested the butt and had it fart in Nathan Fillion's face.
Pretty funny.
Pretty fucking funny. And then you move on
yeah.
to the next one. But we got a lot of people asking us to do some kind of coverage on this, and there is often enough sci-fi, philosophical, like, life issues the show touches on that maybe it'll be interesting to talk about from time to time. I kind of envision this as, like, this is a pitch to why people, if they're not listening to Rick and Morty, if they're not watching Rick and Morty, why they should, initially. And to illustrate that, I want to talk about... because I know you and I have a different relationship to the show.
Yeah. I haven't listened to 500 fucking hours of Dan Harmon's podcast.
I've gone a little off the deep end. I was so impressed. Like, there's very few shows that have, like, kind of altered my media habits. And Rick and Morty, I remember when, like, season two was in the middle of it, I kept on hearing people... Like, Rick and Morty. We had a couple come over to feed our cat when we were on vacation, and we had this whiteboard in our living room.
Did they pop through an interdimensional portal?
They did not. Well, maybe they did. But they drew, like, all kinds of Rick and Morty art all over our whiteboard, and Seth and I are like, what the fuck is this stuff? And they couldn't believe that we hadn't seen it. So we caught up in season two, and Seth and I were so impressed. We found out that, like, this Dan Harmon guy... had written this other show called Community. So we sit and watched all six seasons of Community. We then found out he had a podcast called Harmontown. We watched the documentary Harmontown, and then in the last year we both have watched, like, all 250 some hours of that. I've listened to all of Justin Roiland, who's the other creator of Rick and Morty, his Grandma's Virginity podcast. I fucking watched Monster House because Dan, the children's television show, or Halloween movie, because Dan Harmon wrote it. I've, like, fucking mainlined Dan Harmon because I just feel like he has got this kind of comic genius, and I'm not sure how I can put my finger on it. Now, you've seen Community.
Sure. Not all of it.
But
you've
seen
a couple of seasons.
You've probably seen the best seasons. Like, the first two
couple,
or three are, like, kind of the best.
And I've seen, like, their Halloween specials and a couple of other ones here and there. And I've seen Harmontown, the documentary.
Right.
Which is kind of about Dan Harmon, the man.
Yeah, and, like, the whole idea about the time to Harmontown, the documentary, is they went on, like, a 40-city tour of their podcast, which started, the podcast started, Dan Harmon got fired from his own show in season four by NBC, so he essentially created a podcast so he could talk about it and, you know, kind of keep some creative juice going, and some of his friends in the industry, and... They did this documentary where they followed him around, and I thought it was pretty profound. It's like this, you know, Dan's an interesting guy. He's a highly functional alcoholic. He is a creative genius. He's famously difficult to work with. He is capable of, like, really touching acts of compassion and, like, unimaginable cruelty.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel driven to kind of understand him because I feel like Dan Harmon, minus the genius... and plus the alcoholism, is a lot like me, like, scarily like me.
You plus his alcoholism?
You subtract the genius.
Uh-huh. And you add more
alcoholism. Oh, I'm sorry, you're right. You subtract the genius and alcohol, because I'm not an alcoholic.
No, come on.
I do enjoy to drink, but I'm an alcoholic. Yeah, yeah. You minus the genius and alcoholism, and it's essentially me.
Okay.
We both lived in the Midwest. We both had weird shit growing up. So anyway, that's my experience with it. Do you feel me, though, when I say that, like, Dan Harmon's got, like, something that sort of, like, the closest thing I can compare it to is, like, very early Conan O'Brien, or, like, very early Who's the guy from Ball State Indianapolis? He had the late night show. Dave Letterman.
Oh, okay.
Like every once in a while, a person falls off the turnip truck that has such a different way of looking at humor.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm kind of a humor junkie that like I just gravitate towards it. Do you feel what do you think is the thing? What's his deal? Why?
I don't know that I can put my finger on it, but whatever it is that he does so well, it really speaks to me because right. it's a blend of like truly juvenile bullshit. Like right. he's gonna have butts come out of coffee cups and fart in aliens' faces,
right?
And he's gonna do that over and over again until the alien gets super annoyed. But he's also gonna, you know, speak on these really interesting science fiction or philosophical topics, like you said earlier. Mm-hmm. It's like this sort of crass juvenile humor mixed with this high-minded ideals sort of thing, right. which that's right up my alley.
Yeah.
And I think so. I don't really like Dan Harmon as a person. Uh-huh. Based on, you know, the stuff that I know about him. Maybe that would be different if I met him. Maybe he's just a great guy to hang out with, but I don't think I would want to be married to him. I don't think I would want to be his girlfriend because he seems like a monster when it comes to that kind of stuff. But I do think he is a creative genius. I think his sense of humor is just so perfectly aligned with mine in most instances that, yeah, it works for me.
It seems like that. So I want to talk about the show itself because the pitch is Justin Roiland and Dan Harmon have been friends for a long time since like their improv and stand up days. Mm-hmm. And one of the things Dan likes to do is he likes to take any money that he makes from his projects and just roll it into the next one. He's always bankrupt. Like Dan Harmon was one of the executive producers of the largely failed. Animated movie Anomalisa, but he was with Justin on, like, you know, they're just hanging out and he's like, what do you got going on? And Justin's like, I really like these two voices. I do one voice like this, and he burps, and I do another voice like this. And like he had done like these crude YouTube animations where it was essentially Doc and Marty.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing was, like, you know how we talked about on the Back to the Future podcast how that's a weird relationship. You've got this elderly mad scientist that this 16-year-old, 17-year-old kid is inexplicably have this deep relationship with.
Yeah, it's because of his big speaker, let's be honest.
Right.
He's got the biggest speaker in town.
But he did this dumb YouTube video where, like, Marty or Doc comes in his car and he's like, Morty, the timeline's in danger. The only way to solve it is you gotta lick my balls. You gotta lick my balls, Marty. And Marty's like, you know what? Gee, Doc, why? It's you can kind of, if you close your eyes and think about, you know, Marty McFly, and you can kind of see the patterns where Doc's always just crazy, like, oh my god, if you hug your mom, the world's going to end. And Marty's like, well, I don't understand why that is, or this is so heavy, and he doesn't really question it. And they took that core dynamic where the scientist mm-hmm. knows everything, and the kid is just all kind of like balls and not much brains, and they just pushed it to the breaking point because Rick. They changed it because they don't want to get their asses sued.
Yeah.
Rick is positioned in the series as literally the most intelligent being in the universe.
Mm-hmm.
And Morty, his grandson, is an idiot.
Mm-hmm.
But I've been thinking about it, maybe he's not an idiot. Maybe it's just that he's got like exceptionally high emotionally IQ, whereas Rick is very deficient in that area.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Maybe. You know, by Rick's standards of intelligence, he is an idiot.
Right. But that's the thing. Like, it keeps at – because they also, with all these science fiction elements, like mini worlds and multiple dimensions and infinite timelines that Rick can surf with his portal gun, you know, it constantly challenges you. Like, is Rick really an asshole, or is this a natural consequence of a very super intelligent person being aware of how the universe really is?
Sure, yeah. And maybe he's being, like, the most rational and completely understandable person
right.
in the universe from his own perspective.
Like one of the early episodes in season one is Rick, through a bunch of comedic fuck-ups, destroys the world.
Mm-hmm.
All the humans are mutated in these Cronenberg-esque, disgusting monsters.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, I got one more thing to fix it, Morty. And he pulls out his – he scans the timelines – And he finds a timeline where he and Morty were doing something in the garage that killed themselves. Mm-hmm. And they portal just as you see Rick and Morty. Like, oh, there you go. Morty just tightened on that screw, and it explodes. And they're just this in animation. They're splattered all over the garage, and the portal opens up. Rick and Morty step out of it, and Rick's like, okay, Morty, grab a shoulder. We got to bury these guys. Yeah. And they just come into a dimension and take these guys' lives without you know, even a thought. Well, it fucks up
Morty.
Well,
Morty does, yeah. Morty always is like the conscience, right?
Right.
Yeah.
But the other thing that is interesting about it is that, like, Rick is super smart, but he's still a human. Mm-hmm. So he does have these irrational, like, he'll be the first one to say, like, I have an infinite number of grandkids. How can you threaten one?
Yeah.
But yet he does have some kind of weird preference for his own grandkids.
Yeah, which to me speaks of, to, like, that nature in human beings as well, yeah. Right? Like, we know maybe that some things are rationally the right choice, but yeah. It just doesn't feel good to do them, right?
And, like, with 7 billion people on this planet, like...
It's just magnified, yeah.
Yeah, is my son really special? Should I, like, I mean, how... Like, if I could kill 100 people to save his life...
Right.
Should I?
Yeah.
But I probably would, but mm-hmm. That makes no sense. Like...
When you're thinking of it purely from an objective standpoint, yeah. Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Rick is very much like some kind of weird, fucked up, objective voice
right.
In the show.
Like Morty in the first episode in season 3, he says he's not a villain, but he's also not a hero. He's more like a demon or some kind of fucked up god.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the other thing I like how they play with it is that, you know, so in all these timelines, there's lots of Ricks. Mm-hmm. And they've all, because the official government of the universe, the Federation, which seems to be dominated by these weird cricket beings, mm-hmm. Are always trying to get, because he's an intergalactic, interdimensional terrorist in their eyes.
Yeah.
Because of all the crazy fucked up demon god and fucked up god shit he does.
I'm not sure how they would actually really know that, though, because, like, like, they don't have the interdimensional portal gun, right? So how would they know about all the other exploits he does?
It's like, one of the other crazy things I did is I bought all the Blu-rays and I listened to all the commentaries. And I guess that was an intense debate in amongst the writer's room is, like, should Rick be more powerful than the government? Because in this first episode of Rick and Morty, you see the government has, like, these portals. But it's more like they can teleport anywhere in the universe, but they cannot jump timelines. That's dimensions, the power yeah. That Rick has. He can harness the infinite timelines of infinite dimensions, and right. Kind of effortlessly surf that. So, what was your question?
Oh, my question was just how would they know about his interdimensional exploits if they're stuck within their own dimension or timeline?
I imagine it's like they talk. I don't think they know. There's like the C-137 reality, which is kind of like, you know, our reality.
Right.
And that's the one where the Federation, I'm sure they're in other timelines, but they see all the shit that him and Squanchy and Bird Person get up to. And I think they've surmised.
Okay.
You know, if you see, like, a SEAL Team Ricks, that's the other thing they introduced in the season one episode.
Yeah, the Citadel of Ricks is also awesome.
Yeah, and the other thing they introduced, this concept, is, like, if you have an infinite versions of yourself, this is something they talk about a lot in the commentaries, there's a version of you that's the most you. Like if infinite version of Ricks, there's going to be a Rick that's got a chromosomal problem when he was born, and now he's mentally handicapped.
I would argue that for every Rick, the most Rick is you.
But the
from your perspective, you are the most Rick.
But in this universe, like, it's kind of like known that the Rickest Rick is the mm-hmm. Rick of this particular focus, and he's always right. Like. And then there's a couple ways that manifests itself, like the fact that the Citadel of Ricks have banded together against the government. He's like, well, you guys have already abdicated your Rickness by banding together and being a bunch of sheep.
Uh-huh.
Like, I'm the renegade Rick. Fuck all you all. And, like, it seems like the average Rick doesn't really care about his family. Mm-hmm. But this one does in some weird fucked up way because, like, there's lots of scenes. Now, he doesn't care. Like, there's a couple scenes where... one of the Ricks had this idea to create a daycare for his son-in-law, Jerry, mm-hmm. who is kind of like an emotional punch. He's the Meg from Family Guy of the series.
Yeah.
And at the end, they get their so there's, like, you know, there's hundreds of Jerrys in this giant adult daycare that they've trapped him in. Mm-hmm. And they go to pick him up at the end, and they find out that Morty mixed up the tickets.
Uh-huh.
So at the very end of the episode, they just swap dads, and the dads are kind of like, but it doesn't – like, Rick just doesn't give a shit. But for some reason, his daughter and his grandkids are the things that are important to him.
Yeah.
And I don't know, they just they generate a lot of emotional drama. The thing that's different about this cartoon than like a Simpsons is there's been a couple episodes where I'm just like, they're borderline devastating. Do you remember, because I know you haven't like seen this shit as much as I have, but do you remember the time when he had he met up with his ex-girlfriend who is a do you call those
On that planet where
that's a collective consciousness,
she
takes over a whole world's worth of people and micromanages their lives, and like there's also a story within a story, because they ask you like, you know, is this better? Like, she's running this perfect planet, but they don't have free will. Mm-hmm. And then later, like, Rick gets her super high on some crazy drugs he's caught, and she starts losing control of the planet. And
goes crazy.
And the grandkids think this is great, but it turns out that this was a virulent planet, a vicious racist that was going to tear apart each other at the kind of like humanity.
Okay, yeah.
And it's like, okay, well, is it better to have a perfect planet where everything runs in harmony and unity, or... And at the end of the episode, the collective being Unity, I think is her name, breaks up with Rick. Mm-hmm. And is like, look, it's ironic that this single consciousness is the thing that's like my kryptonite, but like I'm an unhealthy, bad person when I'm with you. And she breaks up with them. And the whole last bit of the episode is Rick trying to do this convoluted, you understand that he's going to commit suicide. And the only way it doesn't work is because he's so drunk at the end that he passes out as the beam is going to vaporize his head.
Okay.
And something they said in the commentary was that like he drinks like he creates this brand new form of life. It's like this baby blob, and it's crying. He picks it up and he comforts it, and he pours this chemical over it, and then he puts it in the beam, and it gets disintegrated. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, there again, he's fucked up. But Dan said that in the writer's room, they meant that to convey that he was drinking that was some fluid that like collapsed all of your possibilities into like a singularity. So like Rick was going to commit suicide of himself in all realities simultaneously.
Huh. Okay.
And like when when I remember the first lot of episode, like I sat on the couch for like a couple minutes because it had this really great song by this band called Chaos playing, and it was just brutal. Just like really soul crushing.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of this is Dan Harmon's exploration of his own demons, how he feels about himself and his relationships with people and family and stuff like that. And I don't know enough about the guy. Maybe you do know enough about him to really comment on that. But it seems like this is a very personal thing for him.
It is. Yeah. And you mentioned that you don't like Dan Harmon the person.
From what I know about him.
No, it's fair because he is. I mean, this is the guy that got fired from the Sarah Silverman show because he would be in a room with Sarah Silverman and Rob Schraub, who are very funny people, and he would be ranting that he's the only one that gives a shit about whether the show is funny or not.
Right. Right. Come on, really?
Right. Sarah, like, again, Sarah, and there's
whose name is on this fucking show, dude?
Right.
Whose reputation's on the line?
And he got fired from Community because he cared more about the show than him, and what I think is to his credit is like for the last 3 or 4 years he's been through some pretty intense like therapy, and I do feel like he's getting better.
Okay,
like he's starting to figure out the shit in his life and like why he is the way he is, and which I think is admirable. And the fact that he shares it all kind of in real time with the internet is brave, and I think is interesting.
Does he still drink a gallon of rum or a gallon of gin every podcast? I mean,
so that's the thing. Like, if
Jesus,
I think there's probably people putting the two and two together that like Rick is kind of a Mary Sue for him,
right?
He's like a hyper intelligent, highly functioning alcoholic that is always right, even when he's wrong,
right?
And like, I think that's like Rick is like the ultimate manifestation of a Dan Harmon. He's like not just smart in comedy, he's just pan dimensionally smart and arrogant, and he can drink as much as he wants, and he always manages to be a hero. But he puts a lot of stuff, like, for example, in this last episode, you see they're actually doing this thing where Beth, who is his daughter, and Jerry, who's the dad, who's just an inept, he's played by what's that guy? He does this, Cyril Figgins on Archer. He's just really good at playing this nerdy, weak kind of dude.
I can't think of his name, but yeah.
Parnes, Chris Parnell.
Yes.
And he's just he's Jerry's the worst. He's thin-skinned.
He is.
He's arrogant, even though he has nothing to be arrogant about.
Yeah.
He is needy and emotionally available, but unavailable, but also like wants all this attention and stuff. And Beth has had enough in the season. They're getting a divorce. And like when he shows up to say goodbye to the kids, he's wearing this weird windbreaker and like hat.
Yeah, what's up with that?
So that's a very Dan said that that was a reaction when him and his when his dad and his mom was going through divorce. Then his dad would pick him up on the weekends, and it's like dad would just like it's windbreaker dad. like as a kid trying to figure out that like his dad's now moved out from his mom, and he's wearing different clothes and he's got a different like that's like a real life memory that his dad showed up in more or less that outfit to pick him up one weekend. Like what the fuck? But it works because like I don't know why it works. Like it taps into
it works
some...
because it's honest, I think.
Yeah. Like if you've been through a divorce, you've been, your parents have rocky times and it's like it's confusing from a kid perspective, and I feel like that they it feels true. Because
yeah,
it is true.
I think so I haven't been through like my parents being divorced or anything, but I think if you have been, there's probably something in here that maybe you couldn't voice yourself, but when you're watching the show, it might kind of flash on and you understand, okay, these are the things that I was feeling at this time. Why was I feeling them? And it doesn't give you necessarily answers, but it gives you the means to question your own feelings about something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think that's what he does so well. He does a couple things really well. A, he's super honest and he's unflinching when it comes to like bearing himself in the show.
Right.
And I totally respect that. I think there are a lot of other things he does well that were kind of showcased in Community a lot.
I think, like for example, I put him right up there with Kevin Smith for dialogue. I actually think he's better.
Yeah, it's great.
Because Kevin Smith can't direct, I don't think. Like, his dialogue is great. But, like, if you go back and watch, like, a Chasing Amy or Clerks, like, the dialogue's good, but the people saying it, they're pacing. It reminds me a lot of watching Star Wars, A New Hope.
Yeah.
Like, you can see what's there, but, like, the actors are kind of flailing, and they're not really getting it, and and this is also, I've watched the documentaries, like, I've heard Ben Affleck say that, like, this guy types this very particular way, and, like, if you try to change it to flow better, he's like, no, fuck it, read it as written, please.
Huh.
And, so I feel like he's got a genius gift for dialogue, and he's also got a way of, like, getting the performance he wants out of people.
Mm-hmm.
Or actually, I don't think he directs much, so maybe he just picks director. Maybe that's the secret.
Yeah.
You should never try to write and direct.
Maybe, yeah. But I think, you know, one of the things he does really well in Community is he kind of comes up with interesting takes on, I mean, it's essentially what Rick and Morty is, interesting take on a pop culture touchstone for everybody, right? Like, he'll have episodes that are aliens, he'll have
the
episodes that are
episodes.
Back to the Future, right? His Halloween ones were always really good. I think he's like got a real good eye for like twisting ideas and nostalgic ideas that you already have about things.
Mm-hmm.
If you watch Community, it's all over that.
Right.
But I think the thing that's special about Rick and Morty is he has the ability to really do anything on this show. Because with Community, you're constrained by the setting, which is a bunch of people in, I forget, is it an English class they start out studying for?
It's a community college, though.
Right, they're at a community college, and it has to be grounded in reality. Whereas Rick and Morty, he can do whatever the fuck he wants. He can use that to make his point. He can use that to do something funny with, you know, a pop culture reference.
Right.
I think Rick and Morty is, like, the ultimate creative outlet for him.
Would it surprise you to know that he is extremely self-loathing about that pop culture stuff?
Yeah, I don't know why. I mean, he does it so well, and
it's kind of like
it's beloved.
I know, but I feel like he thinks that's his one-trick pony.
Yeah.
And he, like, anytime he goes
it's a crutch,
to it,
right?
He's like, but I think that's one of the reasons the quality of the show is so high is that, like, after I've seen some of these commentaries, like, it seems like everybody just cares so much about this being great, not just funny. Like, it's got to make you laugh, but they want to do everything in every episode, and they will not stop until they achieve what they think is good. So when anytime he's doing like a Mad Max episode, it's like, God, are we really going to just fucking do a Mad Max episode? Is that really, like, what's interesting about this?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, like, yeah, in the end, maybe you just do the Mad Max episode, but the brutal evolutionary process he puts it through results in the best version.
Right.
Like, it pays homage the way you want it. It skewers it where you want it. It points out all the absurdities, but also the reasons we like it.
And it ties it into the fundamental nature of those characters, right?
Right.
And the things that they're going through in their quote-unquote real lives
right.
at any given moment.
Right.
So, yeah, I think it's brilliant.
So the one I don't know as much about, because he's honestly he's a troll. He's just a pure troll, is Justin Roiland.
Okay.
Justin Roiland does almost all of the voices on the show.
Does he do Rick?
He does Rick and Morty.
Really?
And, like, again, just about a shocking amount of the voices that are not, like, recognizable celebrity voices.
Yeah, I could have sworn Rick would be Dan.
Nuh-uh.
It kind of sounds like him.
Well, you know what? Dan actually can do a very good Rick and Morty.
Okay.
But it's fine.
I bet, yeah.
Yeah, like, it's not quite as good as Justin's, but it's getting up there. And I think, so... We've talked about the stuff that I like about Rick and Morty, but the other stuff that I like is how, like, fucking absurd it can be.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, almost all of the insane absurdity comes from Justin Roiland.
Huh.
That's, like, Dan sees his job as, like, harnessing this manic genius and pounding it into, like, more conventional, emotionally satisfying plots. Because if it was Justin, it would just be, Rick wanting Morty to lick his balls.
Right.
And all the monsters have
the planet of butts.
But sometimes you need that. Like, for example, the interdimensional cable shows, which are like a mainstay of the first two seasons, where the conceit of that is Rick reprograms the family cable box to be able to watch cable from every dimensional simultaneously.
Yeah.
And that's just Justin improving in a booth, and the animators then draw whatever crazy fucked up thing he's saying.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the tension of the show. Like, Justin is just wanting to do... He doesn't give a shit about continuity. He doesn't give a shit about, like, the emotional resonance. And Dan does. So their talents work well together.
Yeah.
And sometimes Justin's like, fuck this. I want to go into the booth and just... No writing, no plotting. I just want to say a bunch of crazy shit and have the animators draw it. And so he gets to do that once or twice. And then, you know, Dan does the rest of the stuff.
Yeah. Seems like a good compromise.
Yeah. But
I've always enjoyed the interdimensional cable episodes.
Yeah, yeah. So having said all that, what did you think of the first two episodes of season three? Because as we last left Rick, he had
end of season two.
He went to his friend's bird person's wedding. That happened to be a giant sting to get all of the intergalactic, interdimensional, quote-unquote, terrorists in one spot so the Federation can arrest them.
Mm-hmm.
Rick managed to escape with his family, and then they're living on... They had these three different planets.
Planets, yeah.
One was the planet where everything was on a cob.
And
that's the brilliant thing, is, like, you just realize that everything's on a cob, and Rick starts freaking out. Like, everybody got to go. Like for
why?
Whatever.
I mean...
Yeah, everything's on a cob.
Okay, that's a little weird, but is it that bad?
But
is it worse than living on this tiny...
He whips out this microscope. He goes to the atomic level, and the atoms are actually even on a cob. He's like, everything's on a cob. We've got to go. Like, I don't know what... And they don't even explain it.
That sounds like a Roiland idea to me.
Right.
Yeah.
And then you go to this other planet where it looks like just like Earth. It's beautiful. And then the sun rises, and the sun is just full-throated screaming.
Yeah.
It's got an anthropomorphic face. It's just screaming.
Uh-huh.
And the days last 42 hours. So they're like, fuck this. So then they live... They move this planet. It's about 300 yards across.
Yeah, it's tiny.
You can
walk around it in about 10 minutes.
Right.
Not even.
No, yeah, yeah.
Like 40 seconds, maybe.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And Rick overhears them having a conversation about how shitty their life is because of him, and he decides to turn himself into the Federation government,
mm-hmm.
and he's in their Supermax space prison. And the first episode was guest starring Nathan Fillion as one of the bugs that's interrogating him. Is his breakout of that, and then the second episode is essentially dealing with the family going through a divorce, juxtaposed against them raiding a Mad Max type dimension for some kind of glowing green power rock.
Yeah, I don't know what he's going to do with that, but probably something powerful.
Which
I thought it was funny. I thought the second episode was probably funnier.
Interesting.
In general, I don't know. I mean, the stinger on the second episode was hilarious.
Yes.
So I might just be remembering, like, I have a recency bias, perhaps.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, I really liked, I don't know. It was the stuff with Morty's arm.
Uh-huh.
I thought was hilarious every time they went to it.
Like, his arm, like, became a character.
It did.
Like,
yeah.
It had, it can't,
had its own motivation.
And it can't speak except through, like, gestures and stuff. But, like, yeah, yeah. The way they told it in, like, first arm perspective, his backstory. And,
yeah.
And I thought it was genius. And then the idea that Morty, who abhors violence, like, mm-hmm. Some of the highlights is when he's forced to, like, you know, confront, like when the pacifist shit blows up in his face or he succumbs to some murderous rage. He's this guy who now has his arm that's literally the size of the rest of his body,
yep.
And he gets thrown into this Thunderdome situation.
Just starts.
He's just beating people to death, and he's horrified by it.
Yeah,
and he's like, "Okay, I've had enough." And then the arm starts waving people and doing the Hulk, right. Doing the Hulk Hogan thing with his ears. Uh-huh. Oh God! It's and plus it's
and then Morty at some point. Starts to use it to take out his own frustrations, right, about the divorce.
Because he's angry about his dad not wanting to fight for the family and how his dad's kind of a pussy. And,
yeah.
You know, it's like, well, if you love her,
and
then
he kind
fight,
of sees that
not...
kind of stuff in himself, right?
Yeah.
And he's kind of rebelling against that at a point. Like,
right.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of cool stuff in there. Also, the grandkid bots I thought were pretty good. The spaghetti stuff.
See, that's knowing what I know about their writing process. And it took them like 18 months to write this season because, like, they had, like, the that's the other cool thing, if you're a big Rick and Morty fan, is Adult Swim is having an after the show called Rick and Morty.
Oh, they are?
Essentially ripping off, you know, Talking Dead or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's Dan Harmon and another either writer or artist, and maybe it's just, and there's a moderator. And they just talk about the process, and he mentions that there's this one plot where, like, Rick develops this book scanner that allows them to enter the world of book. Mm-hmm. And they wrote like a dozen scripts and threw them all away because they never could nail the concept. Huh.
So they never made that episode?
Apparently not. Like, okay. Maybe, but I guess bits and pieces of it made it into other, you know, some of the ideas that generated in those 10, 12 scripts. But the fact that, going back to where I'm talking about this, is it took 18 months just to write the fucking thing,
mm-hmm.
Which is forever. I mean, that's like, you know, fucking Westworld kind of time,
right.
to sweat this stuff. And then they have to draw it. And, you know, Westworld, it seems like those kids are a lot – there's a lot of Westworld in it, especially with them talking about, come on, some summer, adjust your emotional upbeatness by 15% and
– Yeah, and your dynamic
movement by 3%.
Lower your dynamic
motion by
3. Yeah.
And – but, like, they must have finished writing that right about the time Westworld was wrapping up. So, like, it kind of amazes me they're able to roll that pop culture stuff. I mean, I don't know. Maybe he just got lucky that, you know, replicants are not as, you know, they don't belong to Westworld. But like, I thought that was interesting how the world they got that pop culture reference in like a 3 week window.
Yeah.
Hey, I want to take a break to tell you about Club Bald Move, because here's the hard cold reality. Mm-hmm. These Bald Move TV podcasts, where we just talk about, you know, whatever that we're watching, essentially everything that's not like Game of Thrones, Westworld, and Walking Dead. This podcast is approximately 0.9% as popular as Game of Thrones.
0.9. So not even a full percent.
Not even a full percent.
Oh, God.
Not even a full percent. It's like 500 downloads away from the 1% barrier. So you might ask yourself, like, well, why do you guys do it?
Yeah.
And my response is because the club members presumably pay for it. And
that's
they
not convincing
it.
Enough for me. Why am I doing this?
It's all theoretical. So, like, I guess if you because we could do other things that probably would be, you know, maybe like 5% as popular as Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
But if you like the Bald Move TV, And some of the smaller stuff that we do like that, the best way to keep it coming is to vote with your dollars. Go to club.baldmove.com, sign up for the club. And you don't just get these free features. You're not just supporting freeloaders. You get a bunch of premium content. Like, if you like this, I'm sure you'd like our quips, our Quit Your Pitchins, one that's dropping today. You'd probably like our spoiler-filled movie podcast. You'd probably like Lunch with Jim and Aaron, which is a podcast we get together on Friday afternoons and we take Q&A from the audience. We talk about stuff going on in our life. It's just a general interest podcast, and you could be enjoying it right now if you join the club. But also, yeah, it funds all this other crazy stuff, because we do this full time as a job. The only way we're able to make 5 to 10 podcasts a week is working at it full time. So go out to club.baldmove.com if you like this kind of conversation, and keep it going.
I think I enjoyed the second episode a little bit more.
I like the first one because it was just – it was – the only thing that bothered me about the first one is they went back to the well of Rick ultimately fools someone inside a simulator by – like, because they did that with the I think they're called Zygerians. The Zygerian scammers that trap people in simulations and extract information from them, and they put Rick in a simulation inside a simulation inside a simulation, and ultimately, they want you to believe that Rick is still fooled and they're trying to get away, and he reveals the formula for power matter or whatever, some shit. Mm-hmm. It turns out it's a fake recipe that just blows them up as soon as they try to use it. They went back to that well with here, where it's like, you know, I guess it works because why can't he do the same scam on two different parties?
Sure, yeah.
But the fact that and then where are you on turning the government's currency, like it's worth one of itself to zero of itself?
Yeah. I think it's a funny idea.
I think they went for broke with the execution.
They did. Oh, for sure. They always go for broke with the execution. Like, I can't say enough good about how this thing is drawn either.
Yeah.
Like, the animation is awesome.
Yes.
There will be moments where you can tell the script literally just says, like, chaos in the background or something.
Right.
And dialogue for Rick and Morty as they run through the chaos. But the chaos looks amazing.
Yeah.
Most of the time.
Yeah. And there's, like, and I guess that this is extraordinarily hard to animate because they usually have an animator in these commentaries, and they're always talking about, like, you know, you can write, have a dome where there's thousands of Mortys strapped to it and they're being gouged by mechanical knives to create some kind of psychic pain shield for this evil Rick that's inside. But, like, motherfucker, try to draw it.
Yeah.
Like, individually animate all of those Mortys as you're panning through it. And, like, some of these crazy backgrounds where you have hundreds of characters that are all visually distinct and they're hand animated.
They're fighting, like, each other, and their guts are being sprayed all over.
Yes.
And,
yes. It looks cool. But, like, I felt like that idea is, like, that's... Because one of my criticisms of Dan is that I don't think he knows a lot about politics nor economics, but he has very strong opinions on them. And I felt like that's a parody of the, like he doesn't understand a fiat currency.
Right.
So, like, just, like, making the dollar worth zero in his mind would destroy an entire civilization, which I don't think it would. But as the bugs have this thing, it's like, well, you know, like, yeah, we can mobilize, but who's going to pay the people we're mobilizing? And then it's like, well, you know, their payment will be their patriotic duty to the... And it's like, wait a second, who's paying me to yell at this guy? And the other guy's like, well, I could tell you for money. And the thing that sold me on it was when the president says, gentlemen, there's a solution you haven't been considering. And he draws his gun out and just blows his head off.
Which, like, blows the skin off, and then the jelly inside, like, collapses onto the desk. It's really brilliantly
animated,
but
it makes sense because he's got an exoskeleton.
Right.
So, like, there's no skull. Like, it's, like, it's, you know, once he vaporizes outer layer, just goo inside there.
Yeah, that was great.
I really like the fact that there's also this, like, I think Nathan Fillion's a genius, and he's this bug that's interrogating Rick inside a simulation, and Rick escapes it by beaming himself into this bug's brain. Yep. And when he gets out, Nathan Fillion is doing essentially a parody of his own voice as if Justin, like he's doing a version of Rick that's doing an imitation of a Nathan Fillion voice.
Huh. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
And I thought that was, and he's still saying stuff like, you know, and his superior's praising him and is like, you know, you should feel proud in your accomplishments, son. It's like, thank you, sir. I always wait to feel pride, or I always wait for permission to feel pride. And I don't know. I thought that was really good. And just like how Rube Goldberg it was, like,
yeah,
the SEAL team Rick's come, he takes over one of them, and then he's the sole survivor, and he's got the scene where it's like, oh, the survivor won't talk to anyone unless they have higher level clearance, and he puts the admiral on the phone, he zaps into his brain, and I don't know. It's really good. I want to talk about the mission statement this season seems to be darkness.
Yeah, yeah. Which is surprising given how dark I think seasons one and two got.
Sure.
I don't know how much darker you want to go, Dan, but sure, let's see it.
So, I mean, that's the thing. Is like, do you believe Rick at the end of that episode where it's a callback to season one where he's ranting and raving about 100 years, Rick and Morty, rickandmorty.com.
Right.
And that's just,
which are always hilarious scenes.
That's all Justin Roiland. Like, I doubt he has a script. He's just screaming and making shit up. Which, by the way, if you want to know about Justin Roiland, some VR expo in Los Angeles paid him to be the keynote speaker.
No, Jesus.
And if you search for, I forget what it is, but like Justin Roiland VR, he does this 30-minute PowerPoint that is insane. And like, he might have even written it the night before. And the only reason it works is because he's Justin fucking Roiland.
Yeah.
And he's making fun of people. He's making fun of how shitty his own shit is. And like, people are eating it up because he's got his own kind of comic genius. Anyway.
Yeah.
I forget where I was going with this. Oh. Where are you? Do you believe? How much do you believe Rick when he says, like, the only reason I saved the grandkids is because I wanted to, like, take over the family, and I want to be the patriarch of not just the family but the universe, and I knew Beth. But like, in his middle of his rant, it doesn't make internal sense. Like, yeah, why does he give a shit about Beth? Like, why does he need Beth's house to live in?
Sure, and why does he need this Rick or this Morty and this Morty's sister? I can't remember her
Summer.
Name. Summer, yeah. Why does he need either of them? He's got an infinite amount of them, as he points out many, many times.
Right.
I mean, there's something about that doesn't ring quite true, but at the same time, I'm like, I kind of want to see how far down the rabbit hole we can go here.
Right.
Because the hallmark of this show has always been it gets really weird and really dark sometimes.
Right.
If they can take that to the next level in season three, I'm all in.
Where are you at with, like, Beth and Jerry's relationship? Because I thought, like, throughout two seasons, they kept finding plausible ways for these people to be together. And it ultimately always seemed very codependent.
And it always seemed very fragile, too.
Yes.
I don't think – you should see this coming.
Yeah.
You should see this divorce coming, and I think it should be a permanent thing.
Right. But I don't know how to split infinities, because like, say there's an infinite versions of Rick or Beth and Jerry.
Sure.
And 99% of infinities, they split up.
Uh-huh.
That 1% is still an infinite number of happily married Beth and Jerry's.
It is. Yeah.
And they played around with that with the first interdimensional cable where they're flipping through the channels and they went to one reality where Jerry's a famous movie star.
Uh-huh.
And the whole Rick and Morty kept watching television, and the rest of the family is obsessed with their other alternate selves. Like, which, here's the version of Beth where she's not just a horse surgeon, she's like a real people surgeon.
Uh-huh.
And here's Jerry's like doing cocaine off Kristen Stewart's boobs and hanging out with Johnny Depp. But at the end of the episode, as they're both like, Jerry watches, you know, there's this slow speed police chase where he's on some kind of, what do you call those rascal scooters?
Mm-hmm.
He's got a hypodermic. His head's half shaved. He's got a hypodermic needle sticking out of his heart. And he drives up to Beth's house, who's the successful people person, and she's just getting drunk on wine and tending to her birds. And she's watching through the goggles as herself opens the door, and Jerry says, "I'm so sorry that we broke up in high school and we had that abortion, and I've never stopped loving you." And they got back together, and I'm like, okay. Does that mean that they're like fated to be in this crazy codependent? I think it's interesting.
I mean, I would say that's probably one of an infinite amount of outcomes to that,
right?
That particular interaction,
right?
You know,
I kept thinking, because they brought in some, like, originally just Rick and Morty, and no one in the family knew what Rick and Morty were getting up to, and then Summer has gradually, by accident or design, gotten more into the, you know, her grandfather's crazy space world.
Yeah.
But Jerry and Beth still have no fucking clue.
It was really that one where she got locked in the car, right?
Was that like the one? Keep Summer safe.
Yeah.
Which, speaking of fucked up and dark, that's one of my favorites, though.
Uh huh.
Especially because Summer keeps putting she gets locked in the car. This is why these podcasts are stupid. I'm just going to tell you something that's funny. Well, what I'm really doing is I'm hoping that more people watch Rick and Morty. I'm hoping that is interesting enough. But she gets locked in the car. Rick tells the car to keep Summer safe.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the B plot. This is the less interesting plot.
Right.
And so the car is like, anytime like a random guy comes to like hurt Summer, and he dices that person, the car dices that person in the laser cubes. And then the second guy comes up, who's the buddy of the first, like, thug, and he's like, "Oh my God, what did you do?" And Summer's like, "You can't kill people." So then the car paralyzes it, and it just gets. Then she's like, "We can't hurt people." So then the next thing, the SWAT team comes, and this cylinder pops out, and she scanned these guys' faces and got all of their history. The car is a female too, and she generates some like a kid. She finds out that the SWAT team commander's kid drowned in a swimming pool that summer, so she generates a clone of it to ask him, like, "Daddy, please don't hurt the car." And then it melts, and it just gets like fucking gets fucking weirder and weirder.
You're going somewhere with bringing Summer in.
Yeah, I think it would be interesting, and I wonder if that's what they're going to do with Beth and Jerry's relationship, is if, like, the knowledge of the infinite universes is kind of freeing, too, because that was one of the points that, you know, Summer was making in the episode where she finds out that, like, she's essentially an unwanted child. Like, her parents would be a better people if they had if Beth had gotten the abortion in high school.
Right.
And Morty's like, "Look, Summer, I'm not even your real brother. Your real brother is rotting out in the backyard. Nothing means anything, which means anything can mean something. So why don't you just come in and watch TV with me and Grandpa and stop, like, essentially get over yourself." I wonder if that the fact that there's an infinite version of Beth and Jerry's that are happily married, like, if they were aware of that, like, what would that do to your relationship? Like, if you're thinking about splitting up with your girlfriend, and, you know, that's always a difficult time, but you knew you're absolutely certain there's an infinite versions of you where you guys are divorced and split up and happy.
Yeah, I think it gives you license to do whatever you want, you know, live in the moment sort of thing.
But what is that, like, to the extent that that would be real, and this is all science fiction, but, like, I don't even know what that does to the human consciousness. Like, if we were confronted with that being a reality and we could actually access those realities, what does that mean that you can
do? Yeah, if you can access them, that's yeah.
If you can do anything you want, like, but what's the point?
Sure.
Because you're simultaneously doing all those things and nothing.
Yeah.
So what is your impetus for action?
Like, one of me's got to do this thing.
Right.
Because there's an infinite number of people. I can justify anything.
Right. So do you then justify, like, well, then I might as well be me? Or do you, like, well,
yeah,
fuck it,
sure.
I'll let somebody. I mean, I don't. And if it's all you, what's the difference between the you that did it and the you that said, oh, fuck it, I'll let the C-135 version of me do it? This is the shit I think about when I'm watching
right,
the show.
Right. No, it's that idea of, I guess, infinite possibilities being created at every moment. Like, you know, I have a choice to make, right?
Right.
Let's say I have a choice whether or not to get out of bed at 9 a.m. or 9:01 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
And I make that choice. Well, one of me has also made the other choice. Now I've got the choice to get out of bed at 9:01 or 9:02.
Mm-hmm.
I make one choice. The other me has made another choice. There's an infinite amount of universes spawning off of your
right,
off of every moment,
right?
You know, every tick of time,
right?
Such that it is.
Yeah,
I don't know. It gets very weird very fast, and that's the thing I like about Rick and Morty is it always kind of, at least, if it doesn't go down every avenue, it at least explores it and acknowledges it.
Right.
Says, hey, we've thought about this. Here's how we view it. Now, here's the tack we're going to take, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah, and they do. They have, like I said, I put it right up there, Black Mirror, for some of the most thought-provoking science fiction.
Sure. Yeah.
But it's this also juvenile
it is.
World where all the aliens look like testicle monsters.
No, it's perfect for me.
Uh-huh.
I love it.
Yeah, I do too. I know. And then now, also, I want to say, here are the reasons you're going to watch the first few episodes of Rick and Morty, and you're going to be like, what the fuck are Jim and Aaron talking about? Because there's some things that might drive you nuts. These are things that drove me nuts. Everyone's pupils look like ants having a seizure.
Okay, yeah.
And that really drove
their
me crazy.
Their teeth are what do it for me. Like, sometimes their teeth are solid. Like, you know how you think of drawn teeth where they're just a solid block of white with lines through it?
Uh-huh.
Other times they're like these jagged, spiky things just protruding out of their mouths.
Well, the fact that Rick always has like some kind of vomit or drool hanging from his lips.
And he's always belching right into the mic.
And unless he's completely sober, which is like not 5% of the show, then he doesn't have the vomit. But like the constant belching as he's talking is really a lot to deal with.
It is.
And I think that is that getting better or have I just gotten used to it? Because I can still watch a pilot episode and be like, Jesus Christ, Rick is burping a lot.
Yeah, no, I think they've done less of it over the years.
Huh.
I can recall like two instances from these last couple episodes.
Okay.
I think they use it more for effect now than they do just a constant mannerism.
Right, when Rick was ranting in the end of like this fucking drool spit green shit was just flying everywhere. The other thing that I thought was really
dumb, he has something like particularly profound to say and he just belches right in the middle of it.
Right.
Which just changed like which octave he's talking in. It's brilliant. I love it.
The other thing I wasn't quite sure about is the catchphrasing. Like some of that stuff felt like the wubba lubba dub dub and shit. Like that felt really forced. And at some point I turned the corner on it and now I love it.
Yeah. I mean, it gives something, it gives like fans a touchstone, you know.
Right.
They can just go through a con and shout "wub lub dub dub," and everybody knows what they're talking about.
But then they also, and I don't want to engage too much in spoilers, but they also then start pinning continuity on it, and like, oh, you find that the "wub lub," it's like it, you think it's Grandpa's crazy catchphrase, but it actually means this in an alien language, and what is the implication of that? And
yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah, there's like all this, and there's like. The other thing that's the other thing that scares me about the show, because that's I can't think of any other negatives. Like it, they constantly swear, it's beeped out on Cartoon Network. If you watch it on, sometimes it's jarring when I like we watched it on Amazon just now, and I'm like, oh shit, they say fuck a lot on this show, crazy amount of times, kids and everything.
I don't think I've ever seen it live, so I've only got the unedited.
You've only gotten the unedited.
Yeah,
sometimes I think bleeping makes it funnier.
Occasionally.
But I don't know. It's really, it's like, I thought when,
you know what you should do is go make a cut of Rick and Morty where all of his belches are bleeped.
And yeah,
that would be interesting.
Well, I always thought you were going to say, so we should make a Bald Move edition where we bleep all of our swear words.
Oh, for us?
Yeah. Would that be funny? Would that be a funny effect?
Ooh, it
would be.
I don't know.
It would be a full-time job.
It would be. We need a dedicated editor for that.
We couldn't afford to pay someone just to be the dedicated bleeper. But I think that like there's some scenes where it's funnier, but then I especially noticed that when one of the Citadel of Rick, the head Mucky Mucks, had Summer hostage, and Rick was trying to convince him to let her go by essentially saying how she meant nothing to him. Mm-hmm. And some of her, like, when she's like, what the fuck? That's
really
a really good.
Good
voice performance. It's entirely bleeped out. And it's just, what the beep? And I'm like, I don't know. It's a shame that it's got to be on. It should be an H. Because really the only thing that they don't do in the show is there's no full frontal nudity. Mm-hmm. Although they get close. Mm-hmm. And they bleep the F word.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Having it on HBO, I don't know would open up many possibilities. Rare show that it doesn't apply. Again, I don't know what when we'll be back, if we'll be back, I think we'll probably only be back with an episode that really introduces something new to talk about, either in the family dynamic or a science fiction concept that we find personally interesting, because if it's just day in and day out funny, I mean, we talked about the actual episodes for maybe 10 or 15 minutes.
Right.
The rest was all backstory and why you should be watching it.
Yeah, and if you haven't checked it out, I would definitely recommend it. I like this show a lot.
Yeah, it's
one of the only animated shows I watch anymore. Like, South Park I've fallen off of, even though I think the last season I saw was brilliant years ago.
Yeah.
But yeah, this one I think has a lot of juice left in it, to mine. We'll see what they do this season with the darkness.
I want to see how far they can go with this philosophy of like every season has to be better than the in their minds better than the season before it, and like what kind of relentless what will the show end up being, and you know how many years can you do that before you burn out and you're out of ideas? Because I mean that's the other problem is eventually you know it's not no one sets out to be a hack, but when you're 8 seasons in.
Start repeating yourself,
right.
That can be a problem.
Especially since they also tried to try to follow the Simpsons did it rule, or like if like Simpsons had a story like that, you think about how many takes the Simpsons have done definitively, and how much of that those stories are taken off the table for an animator. That's pretty brutal.
Yeah, but the Simpsons, I think the one thing it doesn't have to work with is this infinite possibilities of interdimensional travel and timelines and
and it does feel
the true
like
sci-fi angle.
They've only scratched the surface of that. I also wonder, like, because it seems like Rick himself is frustrated with the fact that he has this love for his family. It holds him back. And I wonder if he'll like try to eventually experiment with because he's already transferred his consciousness into a younger version of himself. He's he's done a bunch of different experimentations. I wonder if he'll try to come up with a perfect Rick that's just unemotional. But I wonder if that'll cripple
or
him.
Or come up with the perfect family.
Yeah.
Replace the family. You know?
But would he like, because that's the thing, like, the Citadel of Rick seem to all hate each other. Because that's what Morty explained. It's like, you know, they hate Grandpa because they hate themselves, and our Grandpa's the most himself of them all. That could backfire. If all of his family were hyper-intelligent, then he'd probably loathe them as much as he does himself.
Could be.
I don't know. But I look forward to it. Next episode is Pickle Rick. The fourth episode is apparently, because a couple months ago they released like a 5-minute YouTube series where Justin Roiland decided to, for whatever reason, to get in character as Rick by getting actually smashed into the booth.
Oh boy.
And episode 4 is the result of him, like, getting extremely drunk. And you can watch, like, because the producer of the show is like, come on, seriously, just, like, and it doesn't seem like it's fake. It's like, don't take another drink. We're barely getting usable shit for him. He's like, fuck you, I'm the executive producer. Glug, glug, glug. And then he just does this stuff. So, like, I'm...
Yeah, that should be interesting.
I'm excited to see what the voice... But it's interesting because... God, I use the word interesting way too much.
Justin Roiland's going to be, on screen in his underwear, dancing around, singing like Dan.
Well, there's a fine line, because in Harmontown sometimes... Because Harmon and his people drink, and sometimes, yeah, like, that's hilarious, and sometimes it gets, like, 70s-era Johnny Carson, where everyone is fucking high and drunk, and the show's bad.
Yeah.
And these guys are laughing so hard they can't... But no one else is in on the joke. Uh-huh. And listening to the commentary, you can hear, like, episode one... Because they release them... They record them in batches. Episode one, it's like... They're drinking, but it's okay. Episode 2 commentary, starting to slur to speech. Episode 3, it's like some things get crazy, inappropriate. Episode 4, it's like we actually re-recorded the next two because we were so fucking drunk and Justin said some things that, you know, probably wouldn't in the sober light of day. So they, like, there's a point.
Like, even with that, like, okay, it's funny when somebody, when you perceive somebody as having no shame and they're willing to do things that other people... that are considered shocking or that other people would not ever do.
But they're saying things that you wouldn't in polite conversation. They're saying true things about themselves that they wouldn't otherwise because they're in.
Or they're willing to degrade themselves to get a laugh in some way. And I feel like Dan Harmon goes there, but sometimes that can turn on itself. Mm-hmm. And you can almost, like, this man has no shame and it's sad.
Yeah.
And I feel like a couple of times that I've seen Dan Harmon do his thing in, like, Harmontown podcast, it's been a little too far for me.
Oh, for example?
Well, when I say, like, dancing around in your underwear, singing songs, he's not an attractive man, I wouldn't say.
No. The mannequin leg joke.
Mannequin leg joke? Episode.
It's like, this is, like, the time we found Dad's mannequin leg. That's a joke because on the podcast, he confessed that when he masturbates, he has this mannequin leg.
Oh, no.
That he likes to put stockings on.
Oh, no.
And have it rub his nipple as he's kneeling on the bed jerking off.
What? How does that even work? It rub his nipple. He's rubbing his nipple with it.
Yes.
Okay.
And he actually, there's a video of him, I think you can see on YouTube, where he's demonstrating the technique.
Oh, no.
And it's like that. It's like, well, and that's a shit like that. I remember when that episode came out and, like, the Harmontown Reddit was like, that was a shit show. And I don't know if it's like, I don't know if it was funny or good. It was just, like, kind of, like, embarrassing. But then it's a throwaway joke on Rick and Morty. And that's,
okay.
I was going to say, that's also something you and I have, because we used to get pretty fucked up doing podcasts.
Yeah. Sure.
And we don't do that so much anymore because listening to the podcast, we could see, like, there's a threshold where, you know, you go from lubricated to just sloppy.
Yeah.
And it's not funny or interesting and it's just bad.
Sure.
So it's funny to see a multi-million-dollar enterprise go through that same thing.
It is, but it's also sad sometimes. Like,
That's humanity,
I have a lot
right?
of respect for the guy as a creative artist, and when I see him go maybe what I consider a little bit too far, I feel bad about it.
It doesn't seem...
But he does not. He does not seem to.
It also doesn't seem to cost him anything.
Oh,
like,
sure.
Like,
yeah.
He can do a really bad podcast where he's just trashed and not being funny and being belligerent and stupid. But, like, it's almost like he's trained his fans that that's part of the cost of entry.
Uh-huh.
Like, you go and you pay, you know, you pay $10 to get into the show. And sometimes it's going to be amazing, but sometimes you're going to, like, leave shaken and sweaty and, like, what did I just see? And that's part of the thing. Like, you can't get mad at it because...
And I can imagine that that draws in a certain type of fan as well, right? Like,
right.
Imagine, okay, I sign up. I get tickets to go see Dan Harmon. Mm-hmm. I see him. The show is a train wreck.
Mm-hmm.
And I go, I really hated that show. Like, and my friends asked me, oh, what did you think about the Dan Harmon show that you went to the other night? I'm like, it was a fucking train wreck. Dan right. Harmon took off all his clothes and right. he was dancing around with a synthesizer,
right.
singing about his stocking-covered masturbation legs.
Right.
And they go, that sounds fucking amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they weren't there, and so they want to go right. see something like that again
right. Right.
to try and recreate that magic. And I don't know if that's what he's going for.
Yeah.
But I guess he draws in both types of crowds.
Yeah, and there's like some of the worst era of Harmontown is where he started inviting people onto the stage from just the crowd. And the first few times he did it, it was kind of profound because he'd be like, he had this idea that he was trying to create an emotional battery by he want to say who is in pain, who is going through something just brutal, come up on the stage, and they would share the story, and he'd talk to them for 10 or 15, 20 minutes, and then he'd be like, all right, now to get the emotional battery, we need someone that's having an amazing experience. And, like, the positive and negative would give, like, the show a charge. Hmm. And that was – there were some pretty profound interactions that came out of that.
Uh-huh.
But then the attention whores
oh, sure.
started being like, you know, they just wanted on the stage, and they weren't in any particular pain, or they didn't have anything going on in their lives, and it was just it was a bummer for everybody. And you know, when
well, then
Dan,
he should introduce some emotional battery of his own and just berate that person.
Sometimes, like I said, the, yeah, like that's yeah. the thing, but that's not really fun to listen to either. It's
sure.
like tedious and boring and dumb, and everyone's drunk and. They're too drunk to know like what to do, and they're also like Dan's weirdly introverted, so he's not very good at like like dealing like I guess if you're his best friend or lover he can tell you what a piece of shit you are, but like if you're just some random dude that paid to like he has a but then sometimes like famously he'll snap on people on Twitter. He'll go off on like a 30 Twitter reply about what a fucking idiot this person is and how their lives are meaningless, and I don't
yeah.
know, he's an interesting guy.
Okay.
So I fit in the word interesting one more time.
I think
podcast.
That's an apt
I thought
word.
It's interesting.
Yeah.
I think this podcast is interesting.
Right. I think the end of this podcast is interesting to me.
Yeah. I think it stopped being interesting. So, like, abruptly ending it now might be the most interesting way to do it.